Welcome to Peak Health, a radio show dedicated to empowering you to take back control of your health so that you can have the freedom to live the life that you want. I'm Lisa Morse, naturopathic physician on the island at Fern Cove Natural Medicine. I'm dedicated to helping you uncover the root cause of your symptoms so that you can get back on the road to feeling well again.
And I'm Claire Denise, certified health and wellness coach and a personal trainer. Our show is going to bring you information to help you take charge of your health. We're going to cover topics like IBS, heartburn, thyroid disorders, autoimmune diseases, osteoporosis, nutrition, and lots more.
Hi, Claire.
Lisa.
How are you?
I am good. And how are you?
I'm doing well. Yes.
Good.
Glad
good.
To be back in the studio here with you.
Me too. It's always fun to record a new show, and I think we have some really cool stuff to share with people today.
We do. What are we going to talk about today?
Well, we're singing the sugar blues.
Oh, diabetes. Yeah,
exactly. And you're really in charge of it. But the whole idea of the sugar is, you know, pretty prevalent in people's minds associated with getting diabetes if they have a high sugar diet. So I know you're going to tell us a lot more than that, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Cool.
We're gonna dive in. The first thing I wanted to just say is that it's becoming an epidemic. It's very common. There's actually 17 million Americans that have diabetes, and 16 million have pre-diabetes. So basically on their way to becoming diabetic.
So can they avoid that?
Oh, absolutely.
Cool.
There are a lot of things that can be done. And I think that's what we want to stress in this show today, because oftentimes, you know, your doctor may tell you, oh, you're borderline. Maybe your fasting blood sugar is at 98, which over 100 fasting blood sugar is considered pre-diabetes. And then over 126 is diabetes. But, you know, when you're at 98, we want to start addressing it and not ignoring it, because the next year you go back to the doctor, you could have diabetes.
And can you get rid of diabetes? Is it like the measles that you can get rid of?
Well, it's a little different. The immune system is involved with the measles. But yeah, I mean, I do believe type 2 diabetes can be reversed. With diet and lifestyle are a huge part of it.
That is great to know.
Yeah, it is. So I want to say that diabetes, it's associated with a lot of other conditions. So it's second, like other things like heart disease, you know, high blood pressure, kidney disease, liver disease. And there's a lot of negative side diseases of having, after you have diabetes, things that happen due to diabetes. And so it's, you know, it's not just about diabetes.
So does the diabetes general, or type 2 diabetes we're talking about, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That generally comes first, and then mm-hmm. it creates this other conditions?
Right. Absolutely.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when we're talking about type 1 and type 2, so most of the people that have diabetes, 90 to 95% have type 2. The other small percentage is type 1. And we're going to talk about the difference between those two. But the first thing is that diabetes is a disorder of the blood sugar. And this molecule called insulin is at the center of everything. So you're either lacking insulin or it's not working. So what insulin does is it helps blood sugar or sugar get into our cells so that our cells can use the glucose or sugar for energy. And so in type 1 diabetes, typically we call this juvenile onset, but not necessarily so much anymore. There's adults that are getting type 1 diabetes. But it's a autoimmune disease where you're not making enough insulin. There's certain cells in your pancreas which produce insulin, and those cells get destroyed. So you're not making insulin.
And insulin, when you say it takes the sugar into the cells,
yeah,
so it can be used for energy,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
If it doesn't go into the cells, then it stays in the bloodstream.
Right, and that's where it causes a lot of damage to other organs. Yeah. So, and then type 2 diabetes, that is usually, that's termed adult onset, because that's usually when people get it. And it's involved in that is insulin resistance. So basically, you have enough insulin, especially at the beginning of the disease, but your cells are not responding. So normally what happens is insulin binds to your cells and then this door opens for glucose or sugar to get in your cells. But for some reason, that's not working. Your cells aren't responding to the insulin.
The door stays locked?
Yeah, stays shut. Nope, we're not letting you in. So again, you end up with too much blood sugar, blood glucose in your bloodstream. So it causes a problem.
And if I'm not mistaken, can't that cause your pancreas to try even harder to produce more insulin?
Yes, absolutely. And that's what happens oftentimes is people have start off with type 2 and their pancreas is trying to crank out all this insulin and it basically just becomes exhausted and then they're not making any more insulin. So they're almost a type, kind of like a type 1 diabetic. They're not making the insulin. Yeah. So I just want to urge everybody that, you know, if you have prediabetes that,
Can I stop you just for 1 second?
Yeah.
So you just described type 2 and type 1.
That's right. I kind of jumped.
But you didn't actually say what does pre mean. At least for me, it would be clearer.
Yeah. We can talk about that. Well, so prediabetes is, all of this is based on lab numbers. And we're going to get into specifics of those. But so like your fasting blood sugar and then what your blood sugar is after you eat a meal and then a certain measure called the hemoglobin A1C, which is a measure of your blood glucose over the last 3 months. It measures your red blood cells because red blood cells live for 3 months. And so it takes your red blood cells and measures the how much glucose is kind of attached to them. So when you have prediabetes, you're in a certain range of lab numbers, which we'll talk about. And so it's not enough to say, oh, you have diabetes, but it's getting close.
And would it be more reversible if you're only pre-diabetic as opposed to diabetic?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I think they're both equally reversible, but better to start working on it before it gets, to a worse stage. So,
sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just want to mention, with diabetes, other metabolic syndrome, and maybe we've talked about this on another show, but this is a condition where people have high cholesterol, they have high blood pressure, and they have usually abdominal obesity, and then the high blood sugar, and that's becoming increasingly common too. So
what I think is interesting about this is it's often that people have several of these conditions. They may or may not know that it's got a name, but they conduct a normal life. They go to work every day, they have families, they have jobs and so forth. And I can't think they feel as good as they could.
Absolutely.
But they're very used to it and sort of accept it as
It's true. It's kind of unfortunate though, because at some point, things can get really bad and could have been prevented.
So I guess that's going to be one of our messages, right?
Yeah.
This is preventable.
Right. Yeah. So we're going to talk about the risk factors. We're going to talk about type 1 and type 2. Maybe we'll just kind of breeze through type 1 a little bit quicker just because most people have type 2. And like I said, type 1 usually comes on in childhood. But for those people out there who have children, these are things to consider. So genetics, people like to say, oh, it's in my genes. But really, from studies I've read, it's actually only 5 to 10% of the equation. The other part is diet and lifestyle.
Golly, there's a lot of people that blame it on genetics.
I know. It's an easy scapegoat.
Yeah.
So that's only part of it. So as far as type 1 diabetes, there's certain things that increase the risk. One of them is exposure to cow's milk at an early age. So there's studies show that when children less than 2, 2 months old, excuse me, 2 months old, if they're exposed to cow's milk, they're at a 3-fold risk of type 1 diabetes. And
wow.
Yeah, and it's thought to have to do with cow insulin is very similar to human insulin, and there's only a difference of 3 amino acids for you biochemists out there between the structures of the insulin of a cow and a human. And so it's thought that that creates some kind of immune response in humans at that early age, as well as that causes the immune system to be dysregulated. And because remember what we said, type 1 diabetes is the cells of the pancreas are being destroyed that produce insulin. So exposure to cow's milk at an early age, celiac disease. So for anyone who has celiac disease, make sure that you're getting tested, because celiac damages the gut, which is where a lot of our immune system is, and that can cause the immune system to attack the pancreas. Let's see, viruses. If the gastrointestinal viruses, if there's an infection in the digestive tract from a virus that's persistent, that can there's an association that studies show leading to type 1 diabetes.
Do you mean even things like the flu or stomach flu?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mostly, so they call them, the species is enteroviruses, but yeah, I mean, it would be presenting as a stomach flu. And then vitamin D deficiency, there's been studies showing, there was actually a study in Finland of that where children were monitored over 30 years from infancy that were taking cod liver oil, which has vitamin D, and they had an 80% reduced risk of type 1 diabetes.
So this is all for type 1 you're talking about?
Yeah, type 1. So, and then omega-3 deficiencies, because we know omega-3s are your essential fatty acids that we've talked about a lot in these shows, like fish oils and such. Those help balance the immune system. And so that's what we want to do. We don't want the immune system overreacting to our pancreas. Another one that a lot of people don't know about is nitrosamines. So do you know about nitrosamines, Claire?
Well, I know they come from cured meat products that you might buy, like lunch meats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cured meats, hot dogs, jerky, bacon. So there's nitrates in those foods, and when we eat those nitrates, they get converted to nitrosamines, which is just a derivative of it, and that can damage the pancreas, and cause the immune system to attack it. So children are especially susceptible. So if you're eating bacon, which I like bacon.
I love bacon.
Yeah, just, you know, try to get the nitrate free.
So it would say nitrate free on it, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then...
How about hot dogs or jerky? Or Are those also available?
There might be some.
Nitrate free?
Yeah, I think so.
I guess I have to say it's not something I eat a lot of. So yeah.
Hot dogs. Ooh.
I don't look at them. Once in a while, I like a kosher hot dog with the real crispy skin on it.
Yeah. Something to look for at your health food store. And then the last thing I'm going to just say is breastfeeding, because it's so important for developing the gut flora of children, and because we know that's where a lot of our immune system is and helps to fight infections and just keep the immune system balanced. So,
is there also some consideration for the delivery of the child?
Mm, absolutely, yeah.
Because aren't they like coated with a certain, from their mother as they come through the birth canal?
Absolutely.
As opposed to if they have a cesarean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the bacteria, the lactobacillus in the mother's vaginal canal, the baby, you would understand, swallows that during the vaginal birth, and that populates. That helps the lactobacillus, and then actually breastfeeding helps bifidobacterium. I'm getting all scientific here, but it's just another type of good bug in our gut. So
yeah, well, I mean, I'm assuming that, you know, if you don't have to panic if by chance you were fed cow's milk and have a lot of other these potential conditions, but they can more likely contribute to getting, is it still type 1 diabetes,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, so let's talk about type 2 diabetes. So excess body fat is a huge part of type 2 diabetes, especially the abdominal fat around the abdomen. Because what happens is that abdominal fat produces chemicals that cause the cells to become insulin resistant. So
isn't it almost like it's an organ?
Actually, yes. They consider now the excess abdominal fat an endocrine organ, which endocrine is hormones, because that, you know, those hormones are produced by the fat cells. And then, yeah, so it's important to address, you know, excess body fat. And so if you are wondering, you know, where you're at, you can measure your waist to hip ratio. So you're going to measure about a half inch above your navel, and then also around the hips where the buttocks stick out the most. And so, you know, you're going to get the ratio, the waist to hip ratio. So for women, we want it to be less than 0.8 and then less than 1 for men. If you have higher than that, it indicates a higher risk of
and
type 2 diabetes.
Why would it be that people are gaining weight around the middle as opposed to, say, all over their body?
It's a good question.
Body.
Very good question, Claire. I just had someone I was talking to about this the other day. So cortisol is a big one. Stress. So when we're stressed, we produce more cortisol. And actually, cortisol causes us to gain weight in our abdomen. So listen to our stress show. Don't be stressed. No, just deal with your stress. You're going to be stressed, but just
Balance it.
Yeah.
So, ground yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just in case you forgot from a previous show.
So yeah, so excess body fat is, you know, one of the number one things for risk factors. But then I would also say physical inactivity. You know, there's been plenty of studies showing that increased sedentary behaviors like watching TV, these people have significantly higher risks of type 2 diabetes.
So I have wrangled with this idea. There are people that are, let's call them couch potatoes, but they go to the gym for an hour every day.
Yeah.
So the percentage of their time that they're actually active is not extremely large.
Right.
So I'm a proponent of having an active lifestyle in general. You know, not necessarily just going to the gym. I just wanted to throw that in.
No, I think that's great. I think that's really important, you know, because 1 hour a day doesn't cut it.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. It's better than not. But it's, it's not the same as, like, say, generally having an active lifestyle.
I agree.
Where you're not watching TV, you're outside, or you're on your feet.
Yeah.
Doing projects.
Good point. I like it. Yeah. So the next thing is diet. It's another huge part of type 2 diabetes. And so we're going to get really into details about that, about what is the best diet. But in general, you know, eating complex carbohydrates instead of refined carbohydrates. So legumes, whole grains, vegetables are your complex carbohydrates versus refined carbohydrates like pastries, breads, and things like that.
And what I... be correct in thinking the biggest difference between the refined and the complex is the amount of processing, and that being said, it's really the amount of fiber that is in the carbohydrate. A simple carbohydrate would have be low in fiber, complex would be higher in fiber, which means it takes the body longer to digest it and break it down.
Absolutely. Yeah. So if it's more quickly digested, then the blood sugar spikes faster. Yeah. And then again, I'm going to mention genetics. You know, there's some part in there, but it can be overcome. And there's a good example that I was reading about. So the Pima Indians of Arizona versus the Pima Indians of Mexico. So the ones in Arizona, they're typically more sedentary. They eat more of a standard American diet, whereas the Pima Indians of Mexico, you know, they cultivate corn and beans and potatoes and vegetables, and they're more active. They're working outside. They walk long distances. They don't really eat convenience foods. And so the difference in the incidence of diabetes, type 2 diabetes, is 6.9% of Pima Indians in Mexico versus 38% in Pima Indians in Arizona.
Wow.
So it's amazing
difference.
Yeah. So again, they both have maybe genetics that predispose them, but lifestyle plays a huge part. So that's awesome. And then environmental toxins is another one. There are studies showing that there is an increase in insulin resistance with increased some different chemicals. BPA, you may have heard of it. It's in plastics. PCBs, arsenic, phthalates.
What's a phthalate?
That's also in plastics, I believe. So
that we may not really have a lot of control over, because as I've been told anyway, you may be breathing, they call them xenotoxins or something, from just driving your car because
that's
it has
true.
A plastic dashboard. And
that's true, yeah. I guess from the plastic dashboard, yeah.
Yeah, and so
but you can minimize the risk. Like, you know, not eating out of plastic containers and using plastic bags for your food and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So. Especially if they're heated?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. But something to consider for type 2 diabetes, I think it's often overlooked, you know, but something that I look at with my patients. So, you know, having heard all these risk factors, you know, prevention for type 2 is, you know, having an ideal body weight. You know, keeping active. And then another thing I want to mention is just getting your sleep. Lack of sleep has been shown to increase insulin resistance. And also make sure you don't have sleep apnea, which is, if the listeners don't know, sleep apnea is when you actually stop breathing during sleep. And so your quality of your sleep is not good. And so that can lead to increased insulin resistance.
Is the apnea caused by the throat closing off? Like, it's like fatty
throat?
That's
a good question. Yeah, that's part of it. People with a wider neck circumference there's a correlation with sleep apnea. But I don't really know that we exactly know the causes of sleep apnea. I mean, I've read a lot of things about the structure of the mouth and the throat and all that kind of stuff. But yeah. I think it's still kind of unknown.
Well, lack of sleep is a contributor for a lot of things.
Yeah.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because we just don't get the recharge if we don't sleep enough.
Absolutely. We need to sleep to heal. Yeah. And so, yeah. So that's, you know, the risk factors for type 2. I just want to mention, do you know what the symptoms of diabetes are, Claire?
Do I know what well, obviously, if you get a number,
oh,
that's
right.
One way to know.
Well, that's not a symptom, though.
You might spend a lot of time in the bathroom.
Yes.
and let's see, what else do I... Those are the two that I can think of right off the top. Oh, I think no matter how much you drink, you're still thirsty.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Those are the couple that I've...
Yeah.
And are there others?
There are a few other ones. Extreme hunger. You can have weight loss, and then fatigue. So it's all about the glucose. So you have so much glucose in your bloodstream, it's not getting into your cells, then it's causing you to urinate more.
Because your body's trying to get rid of it?
No, it has to do with osmolality and concentration and all that stuff.
Osmolality?
Well, because you have all this glucose in your urine. So normally when your blood gets filtered in your kidneys, you reabsorb water. But since you have this high concentration of glucose or sugar in the kidneys, the water doesn't get reabsorbed. It stays in there to dilute it out.
Can
it's a chemistry
the urine
thing.
Smell differently or Swedish too?
I think so, because it's yeah, like sugar.
I think I've heard that.
Yeah, so you're urinating a lot, so you get really thirsty because you're, you know, getting rid of all your water. You get really hungry because you're not getting glucose into your cells to make energy. And then you're losing weight because you're not getting glucose into your cells. And you're tired.
So these things all sound so sort of rudimentary that, you know, anybody could have several of these things going on, whether they're either losing weight or gaining weight or tired or, you know.
It's true, but I mean, with type 2, I would say definitely with type 2, you might not know as much. Type 1, it's usually gets pretty serious.
You
get pretty sick.
Marked symptoms
that
you recognize that something's not right.
Right. With
so,
type 2, it's
type
much
2,
more.
You need to. Maybe if you have a couple of these things going on, you should probably check with your doctor.
I think so. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like Dr. Lisa Morris at Fern Cove Medicine.
Yes. You're listening to KVSH, the voice of Vashon at 101.9. I'm Dr. Lisa Morris, and I'm here with Claire Denice, health coach and personal trainer.
Hello.
Thanks for listening to us. We're talking about diabetes. And so what I was going to say next was we were talking about diagnosing diabetes, what the lab numbers are. So you can...
Before you do that, can you just run through those symptoms again?
Oh, yeah, quickly for me? Frequent urination, excessive thirst, extreme hunger, unusual weight loss, increased fatigue. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Of course. So when you go to your doctor, a lot of times a yearly test, they will want to do a fasting blood sugar. So you have to can't eat before you go into the doctor and get your blood drawn. Usually 10 hours is the requirement. And so if your blood sugar is more than 126 after a 10-hour fast, you have diabetes. And so I've read some statistics that actually it can miss this fasting blood sugar is not always entirely accurate, and that it can miss 30% of cases. Or I shouldn't say it's not accurate. The test is accurate, but it's not checking for your blood sugar after meals, which is can actually be one of the first signs of diabetes.
Well, when you say it's not checking for your sugar level after a meal, does that mean that it goes up too high or doesn't come down fast enough?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Yeah, so like your fasting blood sugar might be normal, but when you're eating food, your blood sugar is going too high after you eat, and it's not, your body's not handling the sugar. It's not getting into the cells. After 10 hours, I guess somehow it handles it, but after meals, it's not handling it. Does that make sense?
So would that not be controlled somewhat by what you ate? Let's say you ate a cookie as opposed to a pork chop.
Absolutely. Yeah, it would be controlled by that too. I'm just saying that the fasting blood sugar isn't the only way that we can assess, and maybe not the best way to assess if we're on the way to diabetes.
Okay. So what's the best way then?
Well, I think a combination, but I do think, and we're going to actually talk about it, I think at the next show, we're getting to the end of this half hour here. But self-monitoring your own blood glucose is probably the best way. But what I want to mention is, so there's the ones that your doctor does is, you know, the fasting blood sugar. And then also another one that's sometimes done is called the postprandial glucose. They do this glucose tolerance test. I don't know if you've heard of it, Claire, but
where you drink the
sugar
stuff?
You drink this really gross sugary drink, and then they measure your blood glucose, you know, say 30 minutes, 1 hour, you know, 90 minutes, 2 hours, to see is the glucose staying in your bloodstream or is it getting into the cells? And so if it's higher than 200, your blood sugar after the glucose tolerance test, I think that's maybe 2 hours, then it's a bad sign. It's your glucose is not getting into your cells and it's staying into your bloodstream.
You know, before we get on to our next show, because we are running out of time for the moment, but I think it's, I would like to stress that there are a lot of things you can do just lifestyle-wise. Even small things can maybe add up. And the reason that I want to stress that is that I've actually, in working with a lot of people in health coaching, they've told me that they've been told that, 110 is okay, or we'll just watch it. And my thought is, well, let's not watch it and see if it goes higher. Let's actually take some action so that we're not just watching it. We're actually beginning to take some action with some of the things that people can do individually without taking medication or anything.
Yeah.
At least arrest it or maybe send it back in the other direction.
I agree 100%.
Particularly if it's like 113 down to 100 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's happened enough times that I'm not a doctor, so I would not venture an opinion about it, but I definitely try to give them a couple tips that they could do with diet and lifestyle.
That's great. I love it. Yeah. Okay. Well, so, and then the last, well, actually, there's a couple more tests. The hemoglobin A1C, which I mentioned before, that indicates your glucose over the past 120 days.
What's that supposed to be?
If it's greater than 6.5%, that means you have diabetes. It's not the best test either. Like all of these together are probably the best, but because it doesn't show if you have extreme fluctuations in blood sugar.
So there was the A1C, the fasting blood sugar, and the postprandial, which is after you've eaten.
Yeah. And then one more test is the insulin level. And that, if you have a high insulin level, that can indicate diabetes because, you know, your cells aren't responding to the insulin. And so your pancreas is putting out more and more and it would be out of the range. So, and then just want to mention, we talked about, you know, the diabetes numbers, you know, 126 for fasting blood sugar, over 200 for postprandial, and then greater than 6.5 for hemoglobin A1C. And the prediabetes numbers are over 100 for fasting blood sugar, over 140 for postprandial, and over 5.7 for hemoglobin A1C.
Okay, that sounds good, like a good place to wrap up for now, and then we'll continue with our second show about diabetes.
Yeah, stay tuned. It's going to be interesting. We're going to talk about self-monitoring your blood glucose, and you can get a blood glucometer and test it yourself.
And be out of denial.
That's right, that's right.
Okay.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Till we talk to you next time.
Take care.
Bye-bye.